You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. So welcome to episode 297, and in this one I get back on Kimberly Quinlan. Now many of you will be familiar with her from this podcast or from the many ways she puts out her good work. But for those of you that aren't familiar with Kim, Kim is a licensed marriage and family therapist who treats people with OCD and related disorders. She runs her own podcast called Your Anxiety Toolkit and also runs CBTschool.com. Now I got her on to talk about her new book, which has just been released, called The Self-Compassion Workbook for OCD. In this episode, we talk about roadblocks to self-compassion, applying self-compassion to exposure and response prevention therapy, some of the exercises or practices in the book, why John Hirschfield wrote the foreword to the book, Kim guides us through a self-compassion practice, how self-compassion can help you lean into fear, when Kim has had to practice self-compassion for herself recently, and much, much more. And thank you as always to NoCD for supporting the show and the work that I do. And NoCD now operate in the USA, the UK, Australia, and parts of Canada. So if you want to find out more about their therapy services, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And thank you to you guys for listening. As always, I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Kim.
Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here again.
Yeah, and I should have said welcome back because you've been on many times. I'm sure many people listening will have heard those. If they haven't, all links in the show notes. So, you know, since we've last spoke, you've written and now published your book, which is The Self-Compassion Workbook for OCD, Lean Into Your Fear, Manage Difficult Emotions, and Focus on Recovery. So well done on that.
Thank you. I'm very, very excited to have it be here finally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I haven't got my copy yet, but hoping it's coming very soon. So I guess my first question is just, you know, whatever you want to say about the book, you know, what's it about? What will people find in it? And anything else you want to share?
Sure. So when I was first contacted about the idea of writing the book, what immediately I insisted upon that submission was that I wanted the book not just to be a treatment manual for ERP, you know, the gold standard treatment for OCD, but to really look at the entire experience of having OCD, which I don't think we talk about enough. And so my whole goal was, as you said in the description of the book, is of course to look at how we can apply self-compassion during ERP, but also to look at the incredible amount of shame that comes along with having OCD, the incredible amount of grief and loss that comes from having OCD and having to all the times lost and the events you've missed and the time that's taken up to compulsions. So the goal was actually to zoom out and really take a bigger look at the experience and also to talk about things, emotions that show up around OCD subtypes and during treatment, like guilt and loss and sadness. And so I did my best to sort of try my best, as I said, to kind of address all of those issues as they go. But the main premise is to identify how much somebody with OCD criticizes themselves, because I think that seems to be the most overlooked part of treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I like that. How is the book structured?
Yeah. So one thing I didn't know before you write a book is went with a publisher is they have very specific ways they like it written. And so it's actually put together in the, while I wouldn't have naturally done this, they wanted it to be done in steps, right? So the way that the book is presented is first we explain why self-compassion is so important. Then we explain all of the psychoeducation that I would give my patients, right? What is OCD? What is an obsession? Why do we do compulsions? How to break the cycle? So we take a look at that. And then we look at the roadblocks. The Roblox is probably my favorite chapter. I basically did a poll on social media with about 1,000 people. And I asked them what their main roadblocks were. And I used all that data to come up with the most common roadblocks that people with OCD have in practicing self-compassion. Then we teach you all about self-compassion, and then we teach you how to apply it to ERP. So that's the way we did it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And is there, so it's a workbook, are there spaces to write stuff in it or?
Yeah. So we tried to make it as interactive as you can. Here is the one thing for anyone who buys the book. And this is what I have learned through trial and error with myself and with my patients, is you can understand the concepts of self-compassion, but actually putting it into practice is where you get the real juice, right? Just like anything. But you can, like I said, understanding the concepts are really helpful, right? It helps you to sort of catch when you're criticizing or punishing or judging. Mm. But then there is this drop, I call it the drop down, which is when you actually drop down into being self-compassionate, that's where your life changes. So the exercises are in effort to get you to drop down into the practice.
Yeah, I like that. Absolutely. And yeah, kind of similar with ERP, you know, we can talk about it, we can formulate it, we can say why it's going to work, but it's implementing it and then our brain seeing that makes the difference through the action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And how would you describe self-compassion to anyone listening?
Well, self-compassion is simply treating yourself the same way you would treat a loved one if they were going through a very similar situation or the exact situation. So it's ultimately offering yourself warmth and respect and nurturing during times of suffering, right? Often when we're suffering, we turn in on ourselves. We kind of beat ourselves up because we're suffering. And so the biggest concept here is acknowledging that everybody struggles and everybody suffers. Even if it's in the area of OCD, to recognize that everyone with OCD is struggling, right? It's an incredibly painful disorder. But asking yourself, how would I treat somebody if I knew they were going through that degree of suffering, and not turning in and punishing yourself for the suffering you're experiencing?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, because it's sometimes hard to think about how we'd give ourselves kindness or compassion, but we can always think about how we'd do it for a friend or a loved one.
Right. Right. Which is why we did the roadblocks, right? That's one of the full chapters. Is often when I do this exercise with patients, I will say, okay, like, how would you treat, let's say, your loved partner or your best friend if they were going through this? And they are very quick to answer it. But then very quickly, a but comes in. But I shouldn't have this thought, or I'm bad for having this thought, or I'm a weak for having a mental illness, or whatever those, whatever comes after the but is often one of the biggest roadblocks to practicing your own self-compassion.
Mm. Yeah. To remove the buts.
Yes. Yes. It's to catch where you disqualify yourself from that practice.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. What are some of the exercises that we would find in the book?
Sure. So the first exercise is very basic in terms of, it's not specific to self-compassion. It's just identifying obsessions and compulsions. The goal is these skills can be used. You know, this is it's a 57,000 word book, but it's got all the steps of ERP in it. The self-compassion practices, though, is where we would either go through and do a lot of reflecting on how you would treat a loved one. There's a lot of meditations and practices where you can practice the art of treating yourself kindly, right? And I can do some with you here in a second if you want. But ultimately, it's really looking at how it shows up in your OCD, right? So you can learn self-compassion. There are many books for self-compassion in general, but this book is around how you can practice it specifically to your experience of obsessions, and if you've accidentally done a compulsion, right? And then the last piece is being self-compassionate about your self-compassion practice, because some people beat themselves up the whole way or because they're not doing self-compassion properly in their mind. So that's another piece of the work.
Yeah, I like that. I can absolutely see how people would.
Yeah.
That would happen. Okay. And we'll do one of the exercises now, if okay with you. While I remember, so we were saying John Hirschfield wrote the foreword to the book. Mm-hmm. What was the thinking behind getting John to do that?
Well, I'm not sure if you know this story, but John was actually working as an intern the same time I was working as an intern. He was many steps ahead of me. And John was one of my first experiences of treating OCD, in that we did supervision together, and he was such a huge mentor for me. I've looked up to John since I met him. And so, of course, when I had the opportunity to write this book, John was like right at the top. I mean, what an honor to have him. Number one, as you know, someone who has written so many books and such a leader in the field. Yeah. But number two, like, he saw me as a baby, right? Like he was there when I knew nothing. So it felt like a real like full circle to have him write the foreword. I mean, I totally geeked out. I sent him all these presents, like, please, will you write the foreword? And his response was like, of course. And I was like, oh, I was like so afraid he wouldn't say yes, but he did. And I'm so grateful.
That's awesome. I didn't know that about your guys' history.
Yeah.
I'm less offended now that I didn't get asked. So.
Oh, you were actually at the very high on the list too, but you wrote an endorsement. Your endorsement book should be there on your doorstep any moment.
Yeah, so buy a copy to see what I wrote. I can't remember what I said, but I'm sure it was good.
You're actually the top endorsement in the book. If you open the book, you're literally the first. Your writing is actually before mine in the book. No kidding. When you open the book, you're
before John's.
And before John's. Yeah. You're literally the leader of my book. Nice. I should be mad at you.
My ego is at peace now. So is there an exercise you want us to go through?
Sure. So what I would say for anybody listening is I want you to just bring to your mind an event that's happened recently. You could choose a very painful event, or you could just choose a small, you know, not so significant event. And I want you to think about what would happen if you just got news that your dear friend or partner or family member was going through something exactly the same. So they called you or they came to you and they said, I've been going through this one thing. And we'll use OCD as an example. So if your loved one came to you and said, wanted you to know I'm really struggling with OCD and it's incredibly painful and I'm exhausted and I'm alone and I'm tormented by these thoughts and feelings and compulsions, I want you to just take a moment and ask yourself, what might you say to them? How might you respond to them verbally? Because they've shared you this with you, this very intimate, vulnerable information. So you could write this down. I encourage my patients and in the book for people to write this down. So you could pause this episode right now and sit down. Just reflect on what might you say. And then once you've identified what you would say, I want you to understand that self-compassion isn't just words. Right? I want you to think about how might your body language change towards the person once they've told you this information? Did you lean in? Did your shoulders soften? You know, did your eyes soften? How did your body language change? Maybe when they started telling you, you were busy and doing something, but as soon as you got note that they're going through something hard, you stopped and looked them in the eye and acknowledged them physically. So quickly just check in and maybe write down again, did your body do when they shared that information of suffering with you? And then once you've done that, I want you to then think about your tone of voice, right? So as you've identified what you would say and you have identified how your body language would change, what would the tone be, right? Would it be very mechanical and robotic, or would it be soft and gentle? Would it be warm? Would maybe the volume of your voice come down, right? How would that shift for you if you found out your loved one was going through, right? And another thing is, how did you then tend to them, right? Did you put your hand on their shoulder? Did you give them a hug? Maybe if that was appropriate, you would give them a hug. If maybe it's not appropriate, would you, you know, for me, it's always to put my hand on my heart. When someone is telling me their pain, I can't help but just hold my hand over my heart to let them know that my heart is connected to their suffering. And so here, what we're seeing, once you've reflected upon this, is how you as a human being connect to other people's suffering, right? And then once you've done that inventory and you've reflected, I want you to then think about this event you went through and then apply the same loving kindness to yourself, right? A lot of times as you're suffering, you can use this activity, right? Just pause, maybe take a couple of minutes to ask, what would I do if my loved one was going through exactly this situation? Even if it's just your car broke down, or, you know, you're running behind on a meeting, like to stop and ask yourself, what would I say? How would I say it? How would my body language be? And that in and of itself can be your North Star or your compass towards practicing self-compassion for yourself. So there's a little practice that we use in the book. Just number one, to help you know that a lot of people, when they're learning these skills, they believe that they're hopeless at it. Like they're such newbies, but you're not a newbie. You've been practicing compassion since you were very young. It's just, it's turning the arrow away from the person and towards yourself.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I like it because it really, like you said, compassion is not just words. That is a part of it, but it's much more. Mm. And that exercise kind of really breaks down the minute detail of everything you're doing as a person to give compassion to someone else. And like you said, the word roadmap came up in my mind of like, it's like the roadmap, or as you say, the North Star or compass. Yeah, because I think it can be confusing at times of how do I be compassionate? No one's ever taught me, you know, school didn't teach me, parents didn't teach me. How do I be compassionate to myself? And by doing that exercise, people can kind of see, well, this is how I do it in detail for someone else. I've literally just got to flip it on me.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. For people who have, just I'll mention, for people who have obsessions around harm or relationship obsessions, sexual obsessions, sometimes this is really hard for them to do, because as they're practicing giving, you know, love towards their loved one, they're having all these obsessions. So that can jeopardize and sort of hijack the experience. So sometimes in those sessions, you might ask yourself, you can actually ask yourself what someone you love would do to somebody else if they were in that situation. And sometimes that can help, because as I've mentioned throughout the book repetitively, is OCD does a really good job of hijacking self-compassion practices and making you feel like it's impossible for you to practice it. But there are many different ways we can actually flip that over and actually have it work for you instead of course, doing what OCD tells you to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, it's a valid point. Like you said, that OCD probably will try and get in the way here, as it does with most things. So yeah, maybe just to be mindful of that, right? That's, and not to beat yourself if it does get involved and intertwined.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess my question was going to be, when did, in your clinical practice, so over the years since sitting at that table with John and, you know, getting supervision from him to where you are now, at what point on that journey did compassion really dawn on you that I need to be using this with my clients?
Right away, interestingly. So in the book, I actually, in the introduction, I write about how, you know, think of me as like a, to be honest with you, I had not in my lifetime that I knew of met someone with OCD until I worked at an OCD center. So I was so green and so fresh, and I'd not experienced it myself. And, but I was in that exact moment working through my own eating disorder and in therapy and deep in the throes of that treatment. And so I was practicing it for myself. And what shocked me was just how hard people with OCD are on themselves. Now, I don't have scientific evidence to back what I'm saying, but I have found them to be significantly harder on themselves than other diagnoses that I treat, such as eating disorders and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so immediately I was practicing these new tools, ERP, you know, and this was all very new to me. And I kept thinking to myself, like, they're going to need to reduce these self-criticism behaviors in order for this to work. So I'm not in any way saying I'm the founder of this concept for people with OCD, because I'm definitely not. But it was a huge part of my trial and error as I was practicing becoming an OCD therapist to catch, like, how self-criticism actually acts out as a compulsion in OCD, because it does. We don't talk about it enough. But from the beginning, I think it was something that shocked me and I felt I wanted to be working on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's huge overlap between like the inner critical voice and an obsession, an intrusive thought. Mm. Yeah, and they yeah. both need to be worked on.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's interesting. My next question was literally pulling off the front of your book, which was like in the title, Lean Into Fear. So in what ways can compassion help someone lean into their fear?
Sure. I have to tell you, when the publishers, who of course a lot of the board publishers, they don't understand OCD, their idea for this was like, make fear go away. You know, and I was like, we cannot put that as a title. Like, I'm sorry, that's not what ERP is about. So the reason that we talk about leaning into fear is, leaning into fear is, in my opinion, the most compassionate thing you can do if you have OCD. So often, and there's a part of this in the book, is when we go to do ERP, we're asking ourselves to do something incredibly difficult. And you're already handling incredible difficult things, and you're exhausted already. So the idea of doing ERP, often I've had many patients say, this feels like punishment. Like, I feel like I'm being punished by having to do this exposure work. And I often spend a lot of time with my patients by telling them that while removing yourself from fear feels like the gift that you've got to give yourself, it's actually creating more problems, right? More suffering. And self-compassion is the act of tending and nurturing your suffering. So leaning into fear is actually, like I said, the most compassionate thing you can do, right? Because what you're doing is you're taking away fear's ability to control your life, and you get to live your life. Right? It's incredibly kind work. And a lot of the exercises in the book is to make ERP, we call it self-compassionate ERP. That's not that's not a trademark. It's just, yes, we're trying to make ERP not be brutal and like a beat yourself up kind of thing. Instead, it's really acknowledging as you're doing it, look what I'm doing for me and my recovery. Look at how brave I am. Can I be kind to myself as I lean into fear instead of beat myself up as I lean into fear?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I really like that. And ERP is incredibly hard. So if we can merge it with self-compassion, then why wouldn't we, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
One thing I will add And it's one of the first things I say in the book, which is self-compassion is not done to make your fear go away, nor is it done to avoid or remove the discomfort that you have. Think of it like the higher of discomfort you're experiencing, the more compassion you practice. You're not doing it to make the discomfort go away. You're doing it to create a safe place for discomfort to live and be and ride, right? Because it's like a wave. So you're creating a safe place so that next time you have it, you don't have to run away so much. It's just like you can say to yourself, like, yeah, I've done this feeling before. Is it my favorite? Absolutely not. Is it easy? Absolutely not. But I know I have the ability to create a safe, respectful place for this feeling or this thought to rise and fall on its own.
Yeah, I really like that. And I always talk in like parts of ourselves, which this idea comes up in many different therapies, and in CFT is one of them. But like, can that compassionate part of you rise up and meet the scared, vulnerable OCD part of yourself, you know?
Yeah. We talk a lot about that, right? Okay. About nurturing the compassion itself. So the way I think of it is it's like a seed. Everybody has a compassionate self or a compassionate voice, right? But you have to nurture that seed. You have to water that seed. And the more you can practice it, they can have a conversation, right? You'll have your angry self show up or your anxious self show up. And then your compassionate self can step in and be like, hey, how can I tend to you? How can I be here for you? It's a huge part of the work.
Yeah, I like that. Absolutely. And what do you need? You know? Okay, no, that's great. And roadblocks, because, you know, before we got on this podcast, we talked a bit about it around self-compassion, and it's definitely come up on my podcast before. People have said, you know, I thought Chance's episode, he was like, I'm not doing self-compassion, it's ridiculous. I don't have those exact words, but that's kind of, you know, he's like, I'm this tough guy, I don't do self-compassion, you know? And then he did it and it was amazing for him, you know? Well, it wasn't instant, you know, he had to work at it. But I guess, yeah, what are some of the roadblocks other than that come up to get in people's way to practicing?
Right. Well, you hit on one, which was one of the most common I found, which was that it makes me weak, right? That this will, particularly, we can speak generally, and that often men find that their assumption is that self-compassion is weak, but women do too, right? Or any sexual, you know, gender orientation may feel that experience. And that's often because society has sort of put us in boxes of what, you know, different genders should feel and how they respond. But the fear that it will make them weak is a huge one. But that's the thing where I have to keep looking at these misconceptions. There is nothing weak about self-compassion. It is a badass practice, right? And it requires grit to practice it to start, right? So I completely don't take on this idea that it makes us weak. It's like I said, it's a badass practice. And self-compassion is not just nurturing. Self-compassion is sometimes saying no and setting a strong boundary. So sometimes a self-compassionate act isn't to like rub your shoulder and say, oh, poor you. It's actually saying, no, I'm going to stand up to this. I'm going to say no. You know, you could, boundary setting is a huge practice of self-compassion. There's nothing weak about that, right? Another one is that because of my thoughts, I don't deserve self-compassion, or because of my urges. And that's a huge one, particularly for those who have obsessions around harm, pedophilia, sexual obsessions, relationship obsessions, scrupulosity obsessions, and many more, is that my thoughts determine my worthiness for self-compassion, which in the front of the book, and this is the thing that when I read it, I'm in love with the first part of the book, which is really dispelling this myth that your worth is hinged on the content of your thoughts, right? Like your thoughts do not disqualify you from being treated with respect and kindness. It's a huge one that shows up for people. For others, some common ones were that I have a mental illness and therefore I'm disqualified, right? That it, or that it's my fault, right? That if we believe, and so, and compassion focused therapy talks a lot about this, is we believe that the only way to motivate ourselves or to be better is to beat ourselves up, to criticize. Now that does have some benefit, right? It does help us if we're doing something that's not super effective, it does help us to examine what's not working. Mm. But what we tend to do as humans is we overdo it and we move into this deep layer of criticism and we think that that will motivate us, but it doesn't. It actually is proven to increase procrastination, decrease job productivity and quality of work. And so self-criticism is not an effective motivator, right? I mean, I could keep going, but they're the main ones that people bring up.
Yeah, yeah. So much comes to my mind. I won't share it. no, those are really good and I can definitely relate to them and I've heard them around, especially the bit around OCD of like, you know, I don't deserve self-compassion. I have these horrible thoughts, therefore that means I'm a bad person. Of course it doesn't, but that's what's going on in the brain.
So I'll tell you the story that I don't want to overshare from the book. I want there to, you know, for people to, there's many more concepts, but this is the one that is the most powerful for me and continues to be as I continue to manage my own mental health and my physical. I have a chronic illness. I've had to practice this so much. But when my son started kindergarten, as we were reading this, I was writing this book, the teacher gave him what all the students got, a clip chart. Now, the clip chart is basically a piece of cardboard with a peg on it. And the peg is right in the center of the cardboard, the long piece of cardboard. And if you're a good boy and you do good things, you clip up. And if you're not such a good boy, they don't use this language, but if you're, you know, talking with your friends or you're not following instructions, you clip down. And if you get to the bottom, if you've clipped down enough times, you have to, you get a call to the parents. But if you clip up enough times, you get a reward. And this is a wonderful way. They don't use good and bad, you know, like you're a good boy and a boy. They use like you did a good thing. But this is a great way to motivate five-year-olds to stay on task. That's their mind. They can't think abstractly. And so it's really effective for them. But we as adults or young teens or young adults take on this clip chart idea that I have to do lots of good things. And if I get to the top, I'm a good person. If I do some not so good things, I'm a bad person. And we do this whole clipping up and clipping down all day long. Sometimes in our head, we don't even know we're doing it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people with OCD are clipping up. Oh, I did my homework. I'm a good person. Oh, I didn't have any bad thoughts today. I get to clip up, right? Mm-hmm. And so the first part of the book is saying there is no clip chart. Everybody's at the top. Everybody is worthy. There is nothing you can be clipped down for. No thought, no behavior, no body size, no body cut, no skin color. You don't get clipped down ultimately. And your compassion practice has to be through that lens. And you have to catch when you clip yourself down and withdraw or deny yourself self-compassion.
Yeah. 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 Good example. I like that. Yeah, I'll try not to clip myself.
Well, I think we do it automatically because we've been societally trained to think like more followers on Instagram, I must be more worthy. Well, that's not true. You know, I relapsed. I did way too many compulsions today. I got stuck. I clipped down. I'm not. And we talk about. This is a little thing for your listeners to think about is in your day, where do you withhold pleasure from your life because you have OCD?
Mm.
When you ask that question, people are usually shocked at how they they withhold kind things. I've had clients even say, like, I buy the generic version of toilet paper because I don't deserve the good kind because of my thoughts. Like, I'm being really fascinated by little nuanced ways that people punish themselves for their thoughts just in daily life.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, no one deserves the bad toilet paper because that stuff hurts.
Exactly. It's not the compassionate toilet paper you could buy, right? It's different if you're buying it because that's your values or because you don't care. But if you're doing it because you've clipped yourself down, that's where you're still giving too much power to your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so buy that premium stuff and show your OCD what's what.
Yeah, and celebrate the small wins.
Yeah.
A lot of people go, well, no, it's not celebratory worthy because everybody can wash their hands for a short amount of time. It's like, no, if it's hard for you, get out there and celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah. And not everyone has OCD when they're washing their hands, you know? Yeah. So you're comparing yourself to an unfair playing field. I don't know if that's not the expression, but yeah.
Which is why we go back to the exercises. If what would you say to someone if they were going through that? So if your friend said, I was able to get to work today, or I was able to make coffee without doing compulsions, what would you say to them? Amazing. So proud of you. How can I support you? That's self-compassion. You do that for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And then was there a time recently, and I'm sure you're saying every day, but maybe a bigger time recently that you had to practice self-compassion yourself?
Oh, yeah, every day.
Yeah.
I've had a very difficult year, which Stu knows me personally and knows that I have. The cool thing about self-compassion is once you master it, or at least sort of master it, which I've written a book on it and I'm still sort of mastering it, is I've found I can apply it to any area of my life. So I'll give you two examples. Is I have a chronic illness, which knocks me literally to my feet. I collapse and my body gets very weak, and I've had to really practice compassion around my beliefs about what my body should be able to do. Even dropping off my children, some days I can't stand in line for very long, so I've had to sort of be compassionate and catch my internalized ableism to say I should be able to do that, just get up and do it, right? So compassion has been huge for my physical suffering. But in addition, a lot of what we talk about in the book is grief, right? Because there is a lot of grief around OCD and grieving time lost, like I said, events missed. Just yesterday, unfortunately, we lost our beloved guinea pig, one of our pets. And interestingly, I was observing, I was with him as they had to put him down. I was observing and able to observe my mind going, you could have prevented this. You missed something. You're bad. You're a bad mom for this. And I was, instead of believing my thoughts, I was able to just go, ah, I see that guilt is in the air. Like, I see that guilt is showing up. And I just kept bringing it back to holding my guinea pig and crying and feeling that sad, but just watching how self-blame showed up, despite the fact that the vet had told me there's nothing we could have done. And I think that happens for a lot of people with OCD, is nobody would blame anybody for the thoughts they have.
Yeah.
But often people very much have a lot of guilt and grief around the thoughts they have. So yeah, they're two examples.
Yeah. No, I like that. Thank you for sharing. And obviously, sorry for the loss of your pet.
Yeah, thank you.
So lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
I think the main thing I would say is literally there is nothing that disqualifies you for being treated with kindness and respect and compassion. Mm. That's the main point. And some people may immediately feel an internal eye roll at that. it's very Instagrammable, right? It can sound a little cliche, but the only main thing I would say is examine your beliefs that make you think otherwise. Because in those misconceptions, you'll find an opportunity for such growth. I feel equipped to handle the worst of the worst emotion just because I have these practices. Mm. And so with practice, you can too, right? So yeah, just remind yourself of that. Maybe put up a sticky note if you need to be reminded.
Good idea. No, I love that. Well, thank you for sharing your ideas, your book with us on the podcast, and, you know, go check it out, people, if you're interested, and links in the show notes and all that stuff. But yeah, thanks as always, Kim. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.